Earplay is produced by National Public Radio and WHA under grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. Hello, I'm Jim Fleming. Welcome to Earplay and the BBC comedy Nightingale's Defense by Peter Whalley. Lawrence Nightingale has it all. Education, a good job, a very good salary, and a mother who loves him. So why doesn't he feel fulfilled? And why can't he find a girlfriend?
I should point out that I'm not a bachelor by inclination or deliberate policy. More force of circumstances. On occasions, farce of circumstances. I mean, I once had girlfriends. A girlfriend? I mean, I once took a girl out. Once.
Nightingale's Defense by Peter Whalley.
Oh, he's a fine boy. So handsome. Oh, the girls are going to love you, Lawrence. They're going to you.
I was born in 1939 and baptized into the Church of England. It was from then on that things began to get worse. By 1947, I was 8, the war was over, and I was being sent to dancing classes. A Polish refugee who'd settled in the village had started them for juveniles.
Of course you must go, Lawrence. Well, don't pretend to be silly when I know very well that you're not.
I can't dance.
Dancing classes are for people who can't dance.
I don't want to dance.
Of course you do. Everyone does.
I don't, so everyone can't do.
It's only through dancing that you'll meet persons of the opposite sex. If you can't dance, you'll be a wallflower, standing at the side while all the beautiful girls glide past, ignoring you. Now go and wash your hands and face. You can't go to dancing looking like a chimney sweep.
I never did learn to dance. It wasn't the business of moving my feet in time to the music. That could have been achieved. It was the awful fact of dancing life that one has first to find a partner.
Hey, Peter, you will dance with Jean. And Mary, you will dance with Lawrence.
Mary, yes.
Yes.
Have we to dance, then?
I suppose so. But only because Mr. Stilinski says we have to, that's all.
Oh,
all right.
I mean, if you don't want to...
I have to, don't I? Because Mr. Stilinski says I have to.
Good.
Well,
good.
Come on then.
Yes.
No.
What?
You don't want to, so...
That's what I'm saying. Come on, it's not a matter of whether I want to. I've been told I have to, haven't I? I thought you wanted to dance with me anyway.
Not now, I don't.
What is the matter with you two?
He won't dance, Mr. Stilinski. Lawrence won't dance.
You won't dance, Lawrence? Why is this?
She's got big feet.
Oh, Lawrence Nightingale, I'll never speak to you again.
In 1950, I went to grammar school, a small, provincial, puffed-up little place with ivy growing on the walls. I was always top of the class. I never got into trouble. In my spare time, I built crystal sets. In the summer of my second year, my form master took me on one side. It was a games afternoon from which I was excused because of my athlete's foot.
Not doing games, Nightingale?
No, sir. I'm excused.
I see. Well, do you think we might take the opportunity to have a word?
Yes, sir.
Oh, it's nothing serious. Just, well, I believe you've been spending rather a lot of money on sweets.
Yes, sir. £1.15, sir.
Hmm. It's rather a lot, isn't it?
But they weren't for me, sir.
No, no, no. I believe you distributed them among the members of your class.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
My mother gave me the money, sir.
Oh, I'm not questioning the source of the £1.15. Just whether it was an intelligent way of spending it. I'll be frank with you, Nightingale. You're a clever lad, very clever lad by all accounts, and I'm sure you'll understand me if I say that, well, popularity isn't something you can buy. I don't want to suggest there's anything wrong with giving out sweets as such, but... Well, I do think you see what I'm getting at, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Your mother gave you the money specifically for that reason, did she?
Yes, sir.
Hmm. And how did the other boys react? I mean, when you gave them the sweets. Did they thank you for them?
Not really, sir. They laughed.
What I didn't tell him was that in order to retain my self-respect, I'd claimed that I'd stolen the money. At least it stopped their terrible laughter. Now, why is it that there are those who fit into the human race as if they'd been born into it, while me and my fellow aliens smile and smile again, but are never allowed in? I mean, even now I feel envious of the man who empties my dustbins every Friday morning. I over-tipped him absurdly at Christmas, then watched through the curtains as he went back to his mates and told them. They laughed. Some things don't change. I am, of course, a bachelor. Always have been. But I should point out, since it is relevant, and anyway, I wouldn't want you to get the wrong idea. I'm in enough trouble already. I should point out that I'm not a bachelor by inclination or deliberate policy. More force of circumstances. On occasions, farce of circumstances. I mean, I once had girlfriends. A girlfriend? I mean, I once took a girl out. Once.
That was a nice meal. Really nice.
Yes. I didn't know whether you'd like Chinese. Chinese food. I mean, not everybody does. Probably not even all Chinese do.
It's very kind of you.
Oh, no. You are, I mean, thank you for coming.
No, it is. And this taxi.
I thought it might rain.
But bringing me all this way in a taxi? I could have caught a train.
It's nothing. I've enjoyed the ride.
It must be costing you a fortune.
Well, that doesn't matter.
It's very kind of you.
No, just...
Look, this is going to sound awful, but there's something I think I ought to tell you. I mean about me and this date that we've had tonight.
Oh?
I did it for a bet.
A bet?
They bet me that I wouldn't go out with you. So I did. I wouldn't have told you, but you've been so kind that I felt I had to.
I see.
I hope I haven't upset you.
Oh, no, no.
I have, haven't I? Look, please forget it. Forget what I just said, please.
I'll try.
Oh, good. Because I really have had a nice time.
For 20 years I've tried, but that silly bitch of a girl is totally unforgettable. That possibly rates, in fact, as the most totally unforgettable moment of my life. Who was it who bet you?
Well, I thought we were forgetting about that.
But somebody did bet you.
Yes. I wouldn't say a thing like that as a joke.
I'm sorry. This is hardly the time for self-pity. In fact, no time is. Not for me. I have to guard against self-pity in much the same way as a reformed alcoholic fears even the smell of tonic wine. The slightest whiff and I'm off. Of course, Mother was there the following morning, rubbing salt into my wounded sensibility.
I hope you did the proper thing and saw the young lady home, Lawrence.
Oh, yes.
Did you enjoy yourselves?
Yes.
And when are you seeing her again? You are seeing her again, aren't you?
I doubt it.
Oh, why ever not?
She's moving away.
What do you mean?
Emigrating.
Oh, dear. When?
This afternoon. I'd been accustomed from an early age to being placed on the rack. I never knew when my mother would launch her next offensive, and so had to be constantly on guard against it. My father tried, I suppose, to protect me, but never with much success.
One thing I've always tried to make clear to you, Lawrence, is that there must be no secrets in this house. Especially as far as sexual matters are concerned. Isn't that so, Father?
Isn't what so?
We've always discussed sexual matters openly in this house, and we'll continue to do so.
Well, you always discuss them openly. Sometimes, I might add, without much thought for your audience.
And what, pray, is that supposed to imply?
I was thinking of the talk you gave Lillian on contraception last Sunday. Over tea at that.
Your sister Lillian is a repressed spinster. I'm not having Lawrence turning out like that.
I'm sure Lawrence will never be a repressed spinster.
Oh, don't be silly. Now, Lawrence, if you ever have any questions or problems regarding sexual matters, then you'll always remember that you can talk to me or your father, won't you?
No. If only I could have grown up to regard sex as a dirty, illicit activity not spoken of over the tea table, then perhaps I might have overcome my unattractive physical self and prospered guiltily. Or perhaps not. In 1957, I went up to Cambridge. While others cycled about or punted on the river, I took a first in natural sciences, then a doctorate. That was easy enough. It was the long, long vacations that were the hard part. Through those interminable weeks, I went home. Only the local library offered sanctuary for my mother's domination. In fact, my fantasies at the time were centered on a certain assistant librarian who wore white cuffs around her wrists and had long white fingers that tripped elegantly through the files of tickets.
Excuse me.
Yes?
I wonder if you could get me a book. A particular book. That you haven't got.
Pardon?
Sorry, I mean, there's a book that I want to use and that you don't have on the shelves, so I wonder...
Oh, yes, I see. Name?
Lawrence Nightingale.
Of the book?
Oh, Molecular Structures. It's by Adams and Williamson.
Publisher?
Oxford University Press.
O-U-P. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Nightingale. I have your name and address already from the other requests you've made.
I suppose I am a fairly regular customer.
Yes, I suppose you are.
A pity it doesn't give me a way of learning your name, too.
Pardon?
Well, since we seem to see so much of one another...
You'll be informed when the book arrives.
Yes.
Was there anything else?
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
I scuttled away to the reference section, where the only other inhabitant was a nun researching the development of the abacus. My father, by then, had become a remote figure, appearing only by chance, bleary-eyed in the early morning, or dangerously jovial by night.
Lawrence, hello.
Hello, Dad. Didn't the dude still be up?
Oh, I've just been having a quiet drink, or two. What have you been doing with yourself?
I've been to a film.
By yourself?
Yes.
And then please your mother. She got it into her head that you were going out with a girl. All of a flutter she was, silly.
No, I went to see a film.
Anyway, have a drink.
No, thank you.
Why not? You do drink, don't you? When I was at university, we did little else.
Oh, yes, sometimes.
Here, then.
No, thank you, Dad.
All right. Your mother was sure you were going out with a girl.
I do wish she wouldn't, keep suggesting that.
You don't like the idea?
I don't. It's not... I just get fed up of Mother going on about it.
Yes, I suppose she does. She does go on about it.
Anyway, it was a good film.
You find it a bit much, do you? The way she goes on about girlfriends and sex and things of that nature?
Well, sometimes, yes.
Not very tactful, is she? Are you sure you won't have a drink?
Oh, no, thank you.
Well, I will. I'll have one for both of us. So she gets on your nerves, does she?
Oh, I don't mean it's that bad.
Because she certainly gets on mine.
Oh?
But, you know, you must try and think well of her. You must try and accept her little ways, Lawrence. Accept them and learn to live with them. Because she doesn't mean to be, nosy or anything like that.
Oh, yes, I don't...
You see, I'll tell you what it is.
No.
What?
I mean, well, there's no need, Father, really.
But I think you should know. Because I want you to think well of her, despite the way she goes on.
I do. It's all right.
You see... Sex was always a big problem for her.
Father, please.
I'm telling you this so that you'll understand.
I do understand.
Now listen, damn it. You see, she'd been brought up in a very repressive atmosphere. Catholic convent, that sort of thing. Sex was, it was taboo, sinful.
Yes.
Well, she always swore that it would be different for you if we'd talk about it openly, that there'd be no shame or... sin attached to it.
Yes, I see. Well, I think it's...
Do you know how long it was before we consummated our marriage?
Father, please.
3 weeks and 2 days.
Oh, God.
3 weeks and 2 days before she could bring herself to...
I suppose my physical appearance isn't exactly prepossessing. Perhaps if I had more hair, or less teeth. Teeth for two, really. I was once chapped by a photographer at the wedding of one of my cousins. I think he mistook my attempts to hide behind the wedding cake as playing hard to get. Anyway, he insisted on my emerging for a quick snap and inquired which was my best side. I replied my inside and was able to hide in the toilets as everyone exchanged amused glances. Anyway, to resume the thread. Cambridge, graduation, thesis accepted, years of study over, appointments board. It was they who suggested the Atomic Energy Authority. I was interviewed.
Well, your references are certainly very impressive, Mr. Nightingale.
Thank you.
You do realize that the area of work you would be involved in is covered by the Official Secrets Act?
Yes. I hadn't thought about it, but yes, I suppose it would be.
Now, I have to ask you, do you have any political affiliations?
No.
You're not a member of any political party?
No.
Have you ever been?
No.
What societies or clubs have you been a member of?
I once went to dancing classes.
While at Cambridge?
Oh, no. That was...
Let's restrict ourselves to your university career, sir.
Oh, yes.
Well, then?
Oh, none.
None at all?
No. I wouldn't be a member of any club that would admit somebody like me.
No clubs or societies.
Groucho Marx.
Pardon?
Said that.
Did he? Well, then, I don't think I need detain you any longer. You'll be called to a board, probably in the first week of next month.
They accepted me? Of course. For all I know, I may have even rated as the perfect candidate. A blank cipher. A willing servant of the country with neither ties nor tendencies to make me vulnerable. Certainly in my case, the Official Secrets Act seemed ludicrously superfluous. There was, of course, still Mother. Father had died, a stroke, and she lived alone in a Hampstead flat.
Hello?
It's your mother.
Hello, Mother.
I rang to find out what you were doing.
I'm doing some work.
At this time?
It's only 8:30.
I know what time it is.
I mean, it's not very late, Mother.
It's late to be working.
It's not really late. I haven't got a girlfriend, Mother. I told you before that I haven't got a girlfriend.
And why not?
I don't know why not, Mother.
I was 29 when I met your father, and he was 34. With a position like yours, you will have no trouble in attracting young ladies.
No, Mother.
I'm saying goodbye now, then.
Goodbye, Mother.
The trouble is, Mother, that the kind of position that attracts young ladies nowadays isn't the kind that you had in mind. I sometimes think, you know, that ours is the most romantic age of all. I mean, no one marries for money or status anymore. They marry for love, of one kind or another, leaving your paunchy millionaires, beloved of Hollywood movies, out in the cold. Still, I sometimes thought that she might just be right. That there might be some old-fashioned girl somewhere who'd been taught by her mother to value salary above sensuality.
I did it for a bet.
A bet?
They bet me that I wouldn't go out with you. So I did.
Oh, for God's sake, not again. Why should I never feel safe from the memory of that humiliation? Even in bright sunlight or shopping in Harrods. That silly bitch can rise out of the past to confront me. I'm sorry. I'm afraid that my earlier warning about addiction to self-pity is proving all too true. Let me, therefore, leap boldly over 10 unremarkable years and approach that part of my life that you are most interested in. On July the 29th of last year, there occurred, not spontaneously, but to plan, a departmental party. My department, but not my party. I don't think I was even meant to learn of its existence, but Foster, a man who clearly despises me, but that's beside the point, Foster affected to let it slip.
Well, I could take a copy from him, sir, if you wanted him to have it for this weekend.
You could?
Yes.
I thought you said he'd gone.
I'll be seeing him tonight.
Oh.
At the party.
The party?
A department party. We're getting together and having a party.
It's somebody's birthday?
Well, it's for the publication of the report. At least that's the excuse.
Ah.
Well, most of us have been working on it for 2 years now, so we thought...
Launching with a bottle of champagne, eh?
Yes.
Well, have a good time.
Thank you, sir. Oh, we would have invited you, sir, but we didn't think, that you'd be interested, that it would be your sort of thing.
Oh, no, that's...
You'd be very welcome.
No, thank you. I have a prior engagement anyway.
Oh, well...
That man was senior to me by 10 years and inferior by at least 20 IQ points and 3 civil service grades. So how could he have the temerity to decide that a party wouldn't be my sort of thing? Not my sort of thing. Not that it would. He didn't even have the courtesy to pretend to believe in my prior engagement. I felt I should have offered proof. I was going round to Mother's, you see, as I did every Friday evening. We used to look through the photographs together and drink some port. So I did have a prior engagement. Oh. When does it start? When is one set aside, never to become one of the lads or lasses? And where lies that invisible mark that is all too visible to those who know where to look? Walking into a boutique to buy their most inoffensive tie, I know how a fish feels when setting foot on terra firma. I smile at the assistant, and he stares back, unresponsive. If it's a girl, it's worse. I once nearly went into a discotheque. It's not that I'm asking for anything extraordinary. I don't seek to be surrounded by sleek sports cars, king-sized cigarettes, bronze breasts, and water skiers. I'm not even sure that I could stand it. It's the pathetic, trivial things that seem quite unobtainable. The right to refer casually to the wife, to joke familiarly about sex, to visit a holiday camp and not be mistaken for a priest, to read and appreciate the popular press, to visit Blackpool and feel at home. I want to stand on the Stretford end and merge into the great swaying mass as Manchester United score. So I tried computer dating. A last effort, really. One final effort to join the human race, to enjoy perhaps a late adolescence. I also bought some new clothes. I bought several pairs of jeans and some T-shirts with strange things written on them. One said, trucking. Just that, trucking. Others were Fleetwood Mac, I don't go to university. Oh, and more simply, Beethoven. I also purchased an assortment of multicoloured Y-fronts. Why, indeed. It was the day after Foster's calculated insult, July the 30th, therefore, that I wrote off for the application form, and a week later I filled it in. Of course, Mother rang just as I was trying to decide which I was most interested in, religion, archaeology, dancing, or watching television. Hello?
It's your mother.
Hello, Mother.
I got my coat back from Bettina's.
That's good.
And your cousin Barbara's having an abortion.
Oh, yes.
Oh, what are you doing with yourself, Lawrence?
I'm filling in a form.
Working again?
Oh, it's not exactly...
You know what all work and no play does, don't you, Lawrence? It'll make you a dull boy.
I'll try not to be dull, Mother.
Then promise me you'll put your silly work away and have a night on the town.
It's not work, Mother.
Well, you're not going to find a young lady by sitting in your room filling in forms.
No, Mother.
I'm saying goodbye now, then.
Goodbye, Mother.
I filled in the form. Lawrence Nightingale, age 38, Doctor of Science, highly paid and highly trusted employee of the Atomic Energy Authority. Single, living alone, no cats or dogs, European, male. Compared to the wild swings of my mother's interrogation, the form was civilized and discreet. Please be assured that all this is relevant to the offences of which I am accused. I wouldn't burden you with my confessions for nothing. In exchange for the form, I received a list of four names, the first three accompanied by telephone numbers, and the last by an address. I tried Pat first. Pat Andrews, a shy, home-loving girl by the sound of it.
Hello?
Oh, could I speak to Pat, please?
Pat?
Yes.
I'm Pat.
Pat Andrews?
Sure. Pat Andrews. How can I be helping you, then?
I was expecting a young lady.
Well, that's very nice for you. But where would I be coming into this?
Well, I thought you were the young lady.
But you're a brave man to be saying such things at the other end of a telephone line. You'd be a braver man still to be saying them here to me face.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't...
Just who the hell are you?
I think I must have the wrong number. A hiccup in the computer? The form stated that my money was not returnable under any circumstances. Undeterred, I pressed on. The second name, Gillian, seemed safer. We did, in fact, meet in front of the Leicester Square Odeon. I was wearing a white carnation. The rain dissolved it into a line of petals down the front of my coat. But it served its purpose.
Oh. Are you...
Yes. Lawrence Nightingale.
Al.
You must be Gillian.
Yeah, that's right, I am.
Pleased to meet you, Gillian.
Yeah, well, look, I don't fancy you. That's no good, is it? Tra.
Silly bitch. She joined her friend waiting in the shadows and they giggled together, looking round at me as though I were the funniest sight in London. Number three, then. Jocasta. A classical ring. Jocasta?
Yes, I'm Jocasta, love.
My name's Lawrence Nightingale. I got your name...
That's nice, love. Well, it's £10 for a visit. Stay all night for 25.
Oh.
38, 24, 36. Natural blonde.
Well, no, that's not really what I was looking for.
Well, there's plenty are, love. Believe me.
I'm sorry.
Never mind, love. Got my number, haven't you? If you change your mind.
And so to number four. Last chance. And remember, please remember, that this whole enterprise was in the nature of a last chance, so things were getting desperate. No phone number this time, thank God. I wrote. She wrote back, suggesting she might call on me. I said yes. September the 17th. I gargled, cleaned my teeth, and dressed carefully, though my hopes in this area were realistically confined to minimizing defects rather than any real achievement. I checked the drinks and set out nuts and raisins in little saucers. Miss Gloria Eastman. A colourful, sensuous name, I thought as I read the letter. And a good thing, too. Because, of course, unattractive though I am, I desire only the attractive. You'd think that years of failure would have made me lower my sights. Not a bit of it. Ideally, I would select from a short list of those young ladies who have graced the pages of glossy magazines, spreading their most intimate secrets over station bookstalls. Failing that, I would, of course, consider other offers. The flat was immaculate, as long as she actually got in through the door to see it. To do that, she would, of course, have to meet me. I had visions of her fleeing up the road, stammering out excuses and saying how sorry she was for having disturbed me. Disturbed me, indeed. Still, perhaps she won't be put off by the unfashionable exterior. She might be one of those old-fashioned girls. Or, more realistically, myopic, so that the light behind me presents a mysterious blur and she mistakes the dome of my forehead for a party hat. One way or another, she comes in. "Why, what a pleasant flat, Mr. Nightingale," she says. "Just a little pied-à-terre," I nonchalantly reply. "Let me show you round. First, the study, lined by books with unapproachable titles and certificates testifying to my mental prowess. Oh, perhaps I should take those down. Too much the absent-minded professor image. Oh, ridiculous that I should get so nervous. Like a young boy rather than a grown man. When I used to go to the dentist as a child, I'd look at the town hall clock before I went in and wish that it would move forward 1 hour. Then I could have had it out. Or perhaps, as in this case, had it off. She's here. Number four on a list of four. I suppose I could pretend to be out. No, I could not pretend to be out.
Good evening.
Good evening. Miss Eastman?
Yes, you must be Lawrence Nightingale.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Pleased to meet you, Lawrence.
Yes, pleased to meet you.
Gloria?
Gloria. Oh, won't you come in?
Thank you.
She was beautiful. Blonde hair to shoulders. Slim, elegant, dressed to perfection. Mother, you would have been so proud.
What a lovely flat you have. And such impressive-looking books.
Oh, they're just for the sake of appearance.
Nuclear Physics, Volume 4. Light reading?
Mainly heat, actually, that volume. Light is Volume 6, mainly.
I see. Well, I'm sure I should say that it sounds fascinating, but I'm afraid that wouldn't be the whole truth.
Oh, no, it's not actually the stuff of everyday conversation, is it? Won't you have a drink?
Thank you. Martini?
Yes, ice?
No, thanks.
One martini. Oh, and do sit down. I'm sorry, do sit down.
Well, I'd rather stand for the moment, if I may.
Oh, yes, well, please do. Stand.
You have some lovely prints.
Thank you. She was beautiful and dressed. Beautifully dressed, with
beautiful hair, and beautiful shoes, showing a polite interest in my possessions, the things that made up my life. She sat down. She sat down beautifully. One martini.
Oh, thank you. Cheers.
Cheers. Would you like anything else? Nuts? Raisins?
No, thanks. Do you mind if I smoke?
Oh, no, please do. Please do smoke. There's a lighter somewhere.
It's all right. I have one.
I don't know where it's got to. It's shaped like a stone, you see, and I might have thrown it away by mistake.
You don't smoke?
No, thank you. I used to, but I don't now. Oh, Mother, if you could have seen me. Entertaining, or not entertaining, which was a greater achievement for me, the most beautiful woman. What's more, she was smoking and drinking in a discreet yet worldly fashion of which you, Mother, would have much approved.
Is this your first time, too?
Pardon?
Computer dating. Is this your first time, or have you tried them before?
Oh, yes, my first time.
Have they put you in touch with other girls?
Other girls? Oh, not really.
Just me, then?
Yes.
They sent me a list of five.
Five?
Five men.
Ah, yes.
With you at number one.
Oh, well, lucky me.
I must say you did rather undersell yourself in your letter. This is a gorgeous flat.
Oh, well.
You said you were a scientist. What sort of a scientist?
I work for the Atomic Energy Authority.
Really? Very high-powered.
Well, certainly powered.
And very hush-hush, I suppose.
Yes, yes. There's a certain amount of hush-hush.
It all sounds very exciting.
Oh, a lot of it's routine. Seen one atom, you've seen them all, really. Can I get you another drink, Gloria?
Oh, no thanks.
You found your way here easily enough, then?
I could hardly have failed with your precise directions.
Good. Not everybody finds me so easy to find. I mean, finds me easily.
You have a lot of young ladies beating a path to your door, then.
Oh, no. I mean, not a lot. I do have a cleaning lady who comes every morning. But she has a husband already, and six children.
Hence the computer dating service.
Well, it did seem that there might be more to life than my cleaning lady.
I see.
And did you,
Did I,
also get fed up with your cleaning lady?
I haven't got one.
Oh.
Before we go any further, Lawrence, I think it's time I made a little confession.
Nothing trivial, I hope.
I'm afraid I'm not quite what I seem to be.
What an abyss those few words opened before me. If she failed me now, then I knew that I was lost forever. Not quite what you seem to be.
Well, I'm a reporter, a newspaper reporter.
Oh. Is that the confession?
Afraid not. Well, not all of it, anyway. You see, I'm doing an article on computer dating. I'm not really looking for anyone at all. I'm here because of the article.
You're not... I see.
I'm sorry. I did it for a bet.
A bet?
They bet me that I wouldn't go out with you. So I did. I wouldn't have told you, but you've been so kind that I thought I had. You've been so kind, I hope you're not annoyed.
I see. This is just a piece of research, then. I'm a sample male.
I'm afraid it sounds rather heartless putting it like that. To be honest, I found that if I told people in advance what I was doing, they would never agree to meet me. Would you mind if I asked you a few more questions?
No.
You wouldn't?
I mean, yes. Yes, I do mind.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think I should ask you to leave.
Of course. Although, if you should change your mind and want to talk...
I won't. I'm quite sure that I won't.
Well, you have my address.
Yes.
Well, then, goodbye.
Dear God, your sense of humour is indeed infinite and beyond our understanding. Or should I have blamed that devil of a computer? It was then that I made up my mind. Or, to be more accurate, I found that it had already been made up for me. I mean, I wasn't even aware that I'd thought about the possibility before. I'd come across a case some 5 years earlier that had been discovered and taken care of, but I'd never thought of myself as a possible candidate. However, 5 minutes after Miss Gloria Eastman, journalist and poser, had left, I found that the decision had somehow been made.
Oh, not that I'm trying to evade responsibility. Just offer some observations on how it came to pass that by 8:30 on the evening of September the 17th, I had decided to become a spy. Excuse the melodramatic term, but it really does sum things up. I had decided to embark upon a career of espionage, offering myself as an agent to some foreign power. A spy. Of course, it wasn't quite as easy as that. I wasn't at all sure how to go about it, or even which foreign power to approach with my application. Russia seemed the obvious choice. All the spies I'd known, I mean known of, had worked for Russia, so I presume they could accommodate one more in what seemed to be a large establishment. As I debated my approach, Mother rang, as she seemed to do more and more. Hello?
It's your mother.
Hello, Mother.
I'm ringing to find out what you're doing.
I'm not doing anything.
You must be doing something.
I'm thinking.
Thinking? It's 8:30 on a Saturday night and you're thinking.
Yes, Mother, it is, and I am.
You're not going out?
No.
You have someone coming to see you, perhaps?
No.
Remember, Lawrence, that there must never be any secrets between us. I sometimes think that you're keeping.
Well, I did actually have a young lady visit me earlier.
Oh, a young lady?
Yes, Mother, a young lady.
In your flat?
Yes, Mother, in my flat.
Are you seeing her again?
I think not.
Oh, she was after your money?
No, Mother, she wasn't after my money.
Sometimes, Lawrence, I just don't understand you.
Neither do I, Mother.
It's 8:30 on a Saturday evening and you let a perfectly nice girl slip through your fingers. So, what are you going to do now?
I'm thinking.
He's thinking.
I'm thinking of becoming a spy.
The government have asked you to become a spy?
Not exactly, Mother, no.
Will I be seeing you on Friday?
Yes, Mother, but you'll be ringing me before that anyway.
I'll say goodbye now, Lawrence.
Goodbye, Mother. You may feel I've missed out a step somewhere. I mean the one that takes us from my abject failure as a computer suitor to my decision to betray my country. You may feel that I overreacted somewhat. I mean, not everyone who is made a fool of by the opposite sex immediately goes and commits treason. Most are content with getting drunk or a good night's sleep. So let me explain. Try and explain. The last party that I was invited to, excluding that insulting afterthought of an invitation from Foster, was 20 years ago at the home of a boy called Christopher Matthews. This is relevant. He had a big house and had invited the whole of his class at school, of which I was one. They probably didn't expect me to arrive, but I did, propelled from behind by my mother, who watched from the car to make sure that I actually went in.
Well, look who it is!
Oh, you're taking a night off from studying, aren't you? You've got some work with you.
I don't work all the time.
This is Lawrence. There's one of our physics and all the bloody teachers put together.
That's nice!
Pleased to meet you.
Real brain, aren't you, Lawrence?
Not like you, then, is he?
I've just got my mind on other things, that's all.
Stop it!
Anyway, I'm glad you could make it, Lawrence.
But thanks. It looks like a nice party.
Cool, man.
Yes, now, help yourself to a drink. They're in the kitchen.
Thank you.
And, yes? Well, if you fancy a job for a while, well, we need somebody to change the records.
Oh, yes, I don't mind.
Well, I mean, just for a while.
Sure. Hey, if the record player comes out, we can rebuild it.
Well, I don't know about that, but you don't mind.
Oh, no, I'll enjoy it.
So I obediently stationed myself by the record player. And oddly enough, found that I did enjoy it. I suddenly realized, you see, that all those whirling figures were under my control. I could determine how and when they moved, at what speed. By a careful manipulation of slow and fast numbers, I could even encourage or discourage budding relationships. Well, since I couldn't join in the party now any more than I could then, it was a similar kind of consolation that I was seeking. I could allow the Robert Fosters of this world to have their fun at my expense, even allow Miss Gloria Eastman to treat me as copy, because I would be secretly behind the scenes manipulating their lives in a godlike fashion that none of them would ever know of. I decided to ring the Russian embassy there and then, before doubts could start to creep in. I'd expected problems, but directory inquiries gave me the number with a willingness that was almost unpatriotic. But, of course, I couldn't use my own phone. Who's to say that he wasn't already being bugged? Perhaps the whole of Special Branch amused themselves nightly by playing back my mother's neurotic gabbling. I put on an old Macintosh, although it wasn't raining, and set out to find a public telephone. I was already beginning to think like a spy, and very enjoyable it was, too. I was used to not being one of the crowd, one of the boys, one of the whatever you care to name, but now it was of my choosing. At last I found a telephone box that hadn't been vandalized. As I dialed the number, I was seized by a desperate excitement. Change. What have I got? Oh, my God, is that all?
Yes.
Yes. Is that the Russian embassy?
Soviet embassy.
Yes, the Soviet embassy. I'd like to speak to someone who might be interested in information.
Tourist board.
Pardon?
Tourist board you want.
No. I have information.
This Soviet embassy.
I have highly classified scientific and military information which I think you might be interested in.
Hold line.
Pardon?
Hold line.
Yes. Oh, no. Hello? Hello? Oh, God. Hello?
Even the simplest matter of becoming a spy seemed beyond me. I was still determined, though. Returning home, I took out some notepaper. I scribbled a few lines that I thought might serve the purpose. They read absurdly, of course. A grotesque marriage between the jargon of business and that of the cheap thriller. I put it in an envelope, went out, and posted it. It was funny how much better I felt straight away, and how the letter itself seemed not so much one of application as of resignation. When I got home again, my telephone was ringing. Perhaps it was them trying to ring me. Hello?
It's your mother.
Hello, Mother.
What did you mean when you said what you said?
What I said?
About becoming a spy.
Oh, nothing much.
It was a joke.
Yes, Mother, a joke.
Oh. Laugh. A young person like you, Lawrence, you should joke more.
I should joke more?
That way you will have more success with the ladies.
Ah.
So, what are you doing with yourself now?
I'm still thinking about becoming a spy, Mother. Nothing happened for some time. There were a couple of telephone calls, supposedly from the tax authorities, checking on certain details regarding my employment. The Soviet tax authorities? Of course, at the time, it didn't dawn on me. I was so used to being cross-examined by telephone that I gave them a potted autobiography without thinking twice about it. There was also the occasion of the man with the pamphlets. It was, I think, an understandable misunderstanding. You see, I was sitting at home one night thinking of my letter and wondering whether I should send another one, when there was a ring at the door.
Good evening.
Hello.
I wonder if I might interest you in one of these publications. And no charge, though you might care to make a donation. All essential reading to those interested in modern life and its spiritual values.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not...
Do you know our movement? Society for Moral Values? Just a coming together of people wanting to make a stand against the corruption which we see every day around us and which threatens us on every side.
I'm really rather busy, you know. I'm sorry.
The menace of communism. A communism which we see as the political result of the decline of our private morality. Could I ask you what you think about communism?
Communism?
A red tide sweeping across the world. You are interested, then?
Am I interested?
Yes.
Are you, well, you know, from, what? Are you one of what? Would you like to come inside?
Come inside?
To talk and things.
Like hell I would. You bloody pervert. Bloody pervert.
A false start, you might say. However, it wasn't long after that that my call-up papers did arrive. At least, that was the way I felt. I stopped at a gentleman's toilets early one evening on my way home from work. Someone came and occupied the cubicle next to mine.
Hello. Mr. Nightingale. What?
Who is it?
I'm in the next lavatory.
What do you want?
You wrote us a letter.
Ah, you're from the...
I have friends who are interested in your letter.
I see.
One of them would like to meet you.
Yes, of course.
at your flat, perhaps?
Yes.
My friend will call. And will tomorrow at 7 o'clock be convenient?
Tomorrow, yes.
You're sure?
Yes.
And you'll have some papers with you.
Papers? Oh, yes, yes, papers.
Good. That is better if we are not seen together.
The following day was my birthday. Not that that's relevant, but it was. I woke to a single card, from Mother, of course. It was large and florid, with the price inked in instead of being rubbed out, one of her more endearing characteristics. I spent the day as usual, though what was not so usual was the pleasure I took from an exchange with Foster. He came to see me on some pretext or other, then, as was his way, casually mentioned something else.
Oh, there was just one other thing, if you don't mind my mentioning it, sir. You see, I'm in charge of the Christmas dinner arrangements, and, well, I couldn't help noticing that your name isn't on the list.
You are? Well, how nice.
I mean, it wasn't an oversight on your part.
Oh, no. Quite deliberate, I'm afraid.
Well, I don't think it is really your scene, sir.
No. Too hectic for me. All that cracker-pulling and paper-hat-wearing. But do have a good time.
Yes, thank you. It must be nice to be content with a quiet life.
Quiet? Well, it may not be in the staff Christmas dinner league, but I doubt that you'd find my life quiet. I hope the turkey's all right.
We're having goose.
How daring. My secretary gave me 2 aspirins to curb my dangerously confident pose. I watched Foster make his round of the office, muttering to colleagues who would glance up at me in surprise, though never with the surprise that I was later to cause. When I got home, I barely had time to take the confidential documents from my briefcase before my visitor had arrived. Perhaps their watches were set to a different time.
Oh.
Mr. Nightingale, I think you're expecting me.
You're the...
My friend told you that I'd be arriving.
Yes, he did. Your friend, he did.
Yes.
Come in, please.
A beautiful young lady. Dark hair, slim figure, wide mouth, green eyes. Perhaps life over there really is better. A land of lithe maidens, distorted by Western propaganda into lumpen farm labourers.
I think we should come straight to the point.
Wouldn't you like a drink?
No, thank you.
Vodka?
No, thank you.
I would offer you a Molotov cocktail, but...
Nothing to drink, thank you.
No. Well, then, you're from the...
Yes. I'm here in response to your letter.
Yes.
Dated September the 17th.
It would be. That was the night.
The night?
The night I sent the letter.
Was this something you'd considered for a long time?
Not really. Would you like a cigarette? I have some somewhere.
No, thank you. It was a sudden decision, then.
It was more or less decided for me.
Oh?
I'd tried everything else.
Everything else?
Computer dating.
Pardon?
Oh, nothing. It doesn't matter. I did send you the letter, yes.
On the spur of the moment?
I don't think important decisions always take longer to make than unimportant ones, do you?
In the letter, you offer to supply your country's secrets to the Soviet Union.
Yes.
But you make no mention of payment.
No. Oh, I see. No payment. I'll give you them for free. Perhaps just the odd jar of caviar at Christmas.
You are ideologically motivated.
Well, not in the way that you would understand.
Are you a Marxist?
No.
Trotskyist? Leninist?
I voted liberal at the last election, so I'm afraid I couldn't claim to be any of those.
Liberal?
Liberalist.
You admire the Soviet people?
Not particularly. I mean, I've nothing against them.
But you don't admire them?
No.
You hate the British people?
Well...
You do hate the British people?
Well, for being people rather than for being British. What could I say to explain? Once I started, it'd be the whole Portrait of a Spy as a Young Man novelette again, and I'd be rejected as too sentimental for espionage work. It's difficult.
But you are serious?
Oh, yes.
You want to betray the secrets of your country?
Desperately.
Why?
Why? Oh, well, Miss...
Anita.
Anita.
Yes.
It's more a matter of causes than motives. Difficult to explain.
It's difficult to believe that you're serious.
Ah, I brought home some documents that I thought you might be interested in. Just for starters, really. Whet your appetite. Demonstrate good intentions or bad intentions and all that.
Hmm.
All right?
They seem to be highly classified and confidential documents.
Oh, they are. That's the joy of it, you see. Nobody's going to miss them because there's only me in the department who's cleared to actually read them.
Very convenient.
Do I pass, then?
You've convinced me, if that's what you mean.
Oh, good. To be honest, I was afraid I might not be, well, the right type.
Oh, we find all types.
Well, then, how about a drink now, Anita, to celebrate?
I'm afraid you've got very little to celebrate, Mr. Nightingale.
Again, that awful shift of tone that presages disaster.
I did it for a bet.
A bet?
They bet me that I wouldn't go out with you. So I did.
Oh, dear God, not that again.
Mr. Nightingale?
Oh, not you, Anita. You reminded me.
I have to tell you, Mr. Nightingale, that I'm a police officer and that I'm arresting you under the provisions of the Official Secrets Act. Anything you say may be taken down and used in evidence.
Yes.
You do understand, Mr. Nightingale?
As much as I've ever understood.
You do understand that I'm placing you under arrest?
Yes, yes. It's a fair cop.
Our conversation has been recorded and there's a car waiting outside your door.
How efficient. May I ask how you knew?
I suppose I can tell you that we received information anonymously. It might well have been your Russian friends.
Why them?
It does happen. You have wealth, influence, no ideological motivation. They probably didn't trust you. On the face of it, there seems little reason for you to risk your very comfortable life.
My God.
Shall we go?
And why did they send you?
Why me?
Well, you're beautiful and attractive. You're an attractive woman. Why send an attractive woman to arrest me? Whose clever idea was that?
I really
Is it somebody's idea of a joke?
I'm sure
it was somebody's idea of a joke, isn't it? Well, isn't it? I must apologize for that hysterical outburst. Not very becoming behavior, even for one recently arrested as a spy. A would-be spy. Oh, and I'm sure I was wrong to suspect any ulterior motive in Anita's being a woman. I mean, I'm sure it was only the random operation of a spy-catching roster that brought her rather than a man to my door. Are there any telephones in prison? If any reforming member of Parliament is thinking of introducing them, please don't. Hello?
It's your mother.
Hello, Mother.
I was up to find out what you were doing.
I'm going to prison, Mother.
Yes, they told me you were.
To prison. You do understand, don't you? I'm going to prison.
Yes, of course I do.
And I might be there for a long time.
How long?
I don't know. 5, 10 years?
5 years, and you will still be a young man.
Mother.
I'm 29 when I met your father, and he was 34. Perhaps there'll be a nice girl for you in prison. And when you come out, you'll still be a young man with good prospects. Just be careful they're not after your money.
Nightingale's Defense by Peter Whalley. In this BBC production, Lawrence was played by John Rowe, his mother by Pauline Letts, his father by Jack Holloway, and Gloria by Heather Barrett. Others in the cast were Patricia Gallimore, Elizabeth Revel, Terry Malloy, Hedley Niklaus, Michael Harbour, and Stanley Page. The director was Roger Pine. This is Jim Fleming, inviting you to join us again for Earplay. Play is produced at WHA for National Public Radio under grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.